You got to know what you're good at. You got to figure out, okay, are you the money guy? Are you the operations guy? So for me, I'm a numbers guy. I really focused on being the best I could at underwriting.
Hey guys, David Robinson here. Welcome to the Lead Sponsor Podcast. We've got another great episode for you today. We are digging deep into the archives of the Lead Sponsor Podcast and bringing you an episode that we recorded a while back with a sponsor that has an inspiring story and has built a real phenomenal business. This is an individual that has bought was working in a corporate career, a high-paid, very demanding corporate career. And while he was overseas working for this company, he ended up buying his first small commercial apartment deal while he was out of the country. And the deal started to go south. And shortly after the deal started to go south, he actually lost his corporate job. And so he was really panicking, trying to figure out what to do. And he was forced to go all in on real estate, and he made it work. And today he has now built a phenomenal company that has acquired over 1,600 units and has $150 million in assets under management. So I am really excited to bring you the CEO of TriArc Real Estate Partners, Joseph Bramante. Joseph, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks, David. Glad to be here.
Yeah, my pleasure. A little bit about Joseph. He's the co-founder and CEO of Houston-based TriArc Real Estate Partners, a wholly integrated multifamily investment company. He purchased his first multifamily property in 2011. Today, working with his business partners, he's grown a portfolio of over 1,100 units, increasing NOI by over 80% on average within 48 months post-acquisition. So that's just a very brief synopsis about the world that you've been in for the last decade, and I'm excited to get the whole story. So if you can, let's back up and let's talk about what you were doing before you got into the real estate space and the process that you went through to get to where you're at today.
Right. So before real estate, I was an engineer for Exxon working overseas in Papua New Guinea. I was based there for 2 years. That's where I made my money. And originally, I was going to try and buy 84 closed houses. In the oil and gas industry, it's pretty common to be what's called a rotator. So my managers were rotating back and forth from Papua New Guinea to Houston, whereas I was permanently there. So every time they came back, it just seemed like they had a new rental property. And I just got tired of hearing about it. And I was trying to one up them, to be honest. And so I was convinced that rental properties were the way to go because my managers kept buying it. And so me and a different friend who already had like five rental properties, we were going to come up and buy 80 foreclosed houses. We had this beautiful spreadsheet how we're going to take these down over 2 years. All we needed was $3 million. So I kept calling these banks for a $3 million loan. They all kept laughing at me and hanging up. Keep in mind, this is a Papua New Guinea phone number they're hearing from. So finally, one just said, buy an 80-unit apartment complex, you idiot. So I didn't buy 80 units. I bought 26, but that was at least, I got my interest peaked. So I went and looked to buy an apartment complex, read a few books, of course. I'm an engineer, so we like to, do the fact-finding, and read about six books. And the book said, yeah, houses are great. They do better percentage-wise. But from a volume perspective, and if you can get over the barrier to entry, apartments are the way to go. So I had more money than any 23-year-old should have, and then combine that with some other fellow Exxon employees, and me and a friend, we got together and we said, let's go buy this 26-unit apartment complex. So I'd successfully tricked my first investor into investing with me. We went 50-50 on the deal, and everything was great. It's a really long story, but the cliff notes were, it was the easiest due diligence I've ever done in my life because we didn't do any due diligence. We put it under contract. We waited around for 30 days. Then we started the loan process. And next thing you know, we've closed the loan and we now own this property. And we're thinking we're the greatest things in sliced bread to multifamily. And you know, two Exxon engineers with all the ego that comes with it. And we had, and we just thought, wow, that was super easy. I don't know why, but it makes it sound so hard. We just must be awesome, right? 6 months later, we are negative cash flowing. We have fraudulent insurance. We have asbestos. And we are four units down with sheetrock down in those four units that we can't touch because we have asbestos. We found this up the asbestos as part of the renovation. So yeah, we were not in a good spot. And then on top of all that, I ended up losing my job at Exxon. So I am rock bottom at this point. And it was, you know, how I went from this really, really big high buying my first deal to really, really bottom low. But I wasn't going to stay down for long. I joined a real estate group the next day. And what I've discovered is, I mean, the knowledge is one thing, but almost more importantly, and I mean, just slightly more important, is the network. You've got to have the network, and even more so, not just network. I mean, we've all got LinkedIn. We all have people all over the world and country who do multifamily invest. But if you're going to be a syndicator, I'm talking like a local group of people, you know, local contacts, title people, brokers, et cetera, and preferably other syndicators who can help you walk you through stuff. Because I did the whole thing, you know, I was 14 hours away by plane. It was a long, I mean, I was on the other side of the world and we bought that first property. So can you do it? Yes, you don't need to be in the market. Obviously, we know this. People buy out of state all the time. I bought out of country. I was the extreme end. It's the only time I've ever bought anything outside of my locale. Maybe that's why I haven't left Texas, because I've been so traumatized from that first deal of buying something sight unseen again that I'm just not going to leave my little neighborhood. But anyway, so that was the first deal. We were in a really bad situation and we joined to get this network around us. I meet my business partner at the time, because one of the other mistakes I made was I hired a bad property manager, which that in itself can kill any deal. So I get a good property manager who's now my business partner, one of them. And we come up with this plan to do this massive $30,000 per unit renovation, which we paid $25,000 per door to purchase it. We're spending $30,000 to renovate it. You tell those numbers to anybody and they're just not going to believe you, right? They think you're just talking crazy, and nobody should ever do that, especially a first time, you know, apartment owner. I mean, they assume like, no, you obviously made a mistake on your numbers somewhere. There's no way that's going to work. And all the mentors that real estate group I joined, even all the way to the top to CEO, they're like, sell the property. That's not going to work. Take a loss, learn your lesson, and don't make that mistake on the next one. Problem is, I was probably going to lose, you know, $100,000, which didn't really sit well with me. $100,000 was, you know, more than half of my investment and still unemployed. So who knows how long it would have taken me to make that money back. So me and my partner, we got a new loan, bridge loan. We did this massive renovation 2.5 years later, or sorry, 2.5 years into the deal. So it took us first 6 months, you know, Armageddon. The next 6 months, we've got a plan. Then a year later, we've got everything in place, renovations done, we're refinancing out. And so like the 2.5 year mark, we're refinancing out and we get 207% return refi proceeds. So we still own it today, no tax. It was great. So that was great,
except for you lost, you went from 25 years old to 35 years old in a span of 2.5 years.
yeah. Which I'm 35 now, so thanks.
Oh, there you go. Well, man, okay. So there's a couple of things I want to unpack there. If you don't mind, I don't want to spend too much time back there on this mindset, but I am curious because I think this will resonate with a lot of our listeners. Here you are. You're an ExxonMobil engineer, right? Making a great income. What was it that caused you? I know that you had, you know, these managers that were coming back with rental properties, but why not just be content with, hey, man, I'm an engineer, ExxonMobil. I have a great career ahead of me. What was it that caused you to say, hey, you know what, I need more or I want more? Was there anything going on in your world outside of the managers that were bringing back rental properties that intrigued you?
You know, the Exxon life's pretty rough. And mm-hmm. You look at any Exxon employee, they'll tell you it's a hard life. They're They're one of the few companies that has a forced ranking every year. So we're all competing with each other every year. It's a brutal company to work for. I mean, great company, don't get me wrong. Super bright people. I'm very competitive. I want to win. And I did well there. I ranked, you know, I got let go. But it's strange. It's always frustrating for me, right? I got let go for personality issues, because who would have thought entrepreneurs don't do well in a cookie cutter organization? I mean, just, you know, disrespect for authority, talking back to managers, you know, correcting manager, that doesn't go well at Exxon.
Gotcha.
But I got the recognition award for 2 years in a row by two different senior project managers for, you know, top performance of that whole project. So it was, anyway, that said though, it was a great experience. But I always knew that I wasn't going to ride the political wave. Like, I had no ambition to be a VP or something of Exxon. It was just a stop, you know, on the route for me. I didn't know I was going to do this. I had no idea I was going to do this. I just thought I was going to be doing something else. I've also got other patents. I was submitting patents for different crazy ideas I had. Like, I was trying all these different things to make it rich. You know, I just had a lot of ideas, and I knew that. My plan though was just to keep working on projects, you know, because you can live overseas for Exxon. Keep in mind, oil was $120 a barrel. It was a great time to be in the oil industry. We were flying first class everywhere. It was nice.
Gotcha.
That's probably not the same anymore.
Yeah.
But nobody would have thought. I mean, we thought it was crazy. I mean, we remember hearing about the crash in the 80s, thinking that'll never happen again. And here we are, 2020, $20 a barrel.
Yeah. Well, okay. So yeah, I appreciate you touching on that a little bit. But so I guess the question is, had you not had this deal that you were having to fight through halfway across the country or across the world, in addition to being let go with Exxon, do you think you would have pursued real estate at the level that you are today?
No. Like, I knew I was being let go, like, probably 3-4 months before. So literally, if I'd waited 2 more months, I would have never bought that property. There's no, are you kidding me? If you know you're being let go, of course you're not going to spend like the majority of what you had made on one deal. No, that would have been crazy. So it just worked out that, and even if I had, you know, part of the reason why I was successful in my first deal is because I didn't have an option, right? I wasn't fighting. I wasn't trying to be successful. I was trying to break even. Like, that was my goal. Don't lose your money. And then at the end of this, I realized, oh, wow, I'm actually going to double my money. So that's pretty cool. But for me, I was just trying to not lose what I'd made, because there's a lot of mental stuff I was dealing with as well. Like, you know, when you get let go from a job, that's embarrassing, right? It's super embarrassing. And I didn't tell my parents for like 2 years. Mm. So they didn't know. They knew I was back in Houston. I told them I quit, of course, because everybody who gets fired tells them they quit, because right. Of course, you know what I mean? And they thought I was just making a huge mistake. They're like, oh, you're an idiot, whatever. And well, they didn't say idiot, but you know, my mom, you know, sure. Mom's there. Yeah, they're like, yeah. Oh, you should go back. Maybe they'll take you back. No, mom, I don't think they will.
Okay. So this is really good. So you get going on this deal. And did you say it was a 22 unit, the very first deal?
26.
26 unit. Okay. 26 unit deal. You fight through it for 2.5 years. Ends up, I mean, a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, I'm sure, getting through it all, but ends up being a really good deal for you. Had you made the decision during that time that you were all in on multifamily, or were you just in survival mode trying to get through the first 26 unit deal and then decided afterwards that, oh, wait, maybe I could make a career out of this and maybe this could be a path for me?
Yeah. So the first time I realized that people can make a career out of this was when I joined that real estate group. So I get let go on a Wednesday. I'm spending 10 grand to join this real estate group on a Thursday. And that's when I had seen it, right? I saw the people, I saw other syndicators there. I'm like, okay, yeah, that's cool. But I'm about to lose this deal right now. So I wasn't kind of had blinders on for the first several months. And then once I was able to kind of get my head above water and felt a little more comfortable, I started really looking around and seeing, you know, wow, some of these guys are really successful. And they're just like regular people, you know, there's a dentist here. This guy was in sales. This guy was an accountant, and they're just taking people's, not taking, but raising money from people. And this was back before 506C. This was all 506B when you had to meet face to face and you'd have these little wine and cheese things or whatever, these little happy hour events. And you're just out there pimping out business cards, trying to, you know, get as many contacts to build your mailing list as you can. Yeah. So it was, you know, a different way of raising money. It was harder in a way because you had to have been there face to face with somebody, and that's when I kind of got my first exposure to it. So that's, I would say, so the first 6 months of ownership, no, I'm thinking this was a mistake. And then I joined at Real Estate Group. Still, probably 6 months into that, I'm still thinking, nah, I might make more as an engineer for some other oil company, and then, as we're maturing the numbers and we're realizing, holy crap, I'm about to double my money on this first deal, then I'm like, yeah, I could do this. Like, this is fun. I like those numbers. That math works for me.
That's great, man. What a cool story and a great way to sort of your foray into the industry. So where do you take it from there? Once you get through this deal, you double your money in 2.5 years. What was the next step for you? Had you started to find other deals and sourcing and putting a team together? What was the process like for you once you decided that this was the career path for you?
Yeah, I did what I think every syndicator does, or at least should be doing, which is joint venturing people who have more experience than you. I had zero experience. The only experience I had, I mean, gratefully, was that one deal that I'd knocked it out of the park. And for some, they were just saying, oh, you know, beginner's luck. He just got lucky. And so I had to go out and then prove that it wasn't just beginner's luck. So I was looking at these other big rehabs. And, you know, when you do a big rehab like that, there's very little that scares you. So on that first deal, we did an asbestos abatement, new roofs, added washer and dryer, added plumbing. We did all new kitchens, all new appliances, all new floors. We did sewer lines. We did it all. So I'd go to these properties that others would have shied away from or hadn't had the experience. And I'm like, oh yeah, this is what it cost me on the last deal. Here's my benchmark. I know what it costs. So I can quickly underwrite these and I'm comfortable doing it because I understand not just what it costs, but understand the execution process of getting it done. So I'd kind of start going after these big value adds because also that's where the money was. You can do these big rehabs plus cap rate compression. You can really get a big return. So we were doing big value adds. I did the second one was a $22,000 a door. The third one was a $18,000. The third one almost took me down because not took me down, but that almost left the mark on me because it was one of those where we underwrote it and just nothing went right. It was also the first deal that I purchased that I didn't personally do the due diligence on. It was a previous guy. My partner was representing a buyer. They were going to be the third party manager. And this guy backed out for, I forgot what the reason was. And then so immediately they came to me and they said, hey, we should buy this deal. We've done the full due diligence. It looks great, yada, yada. And I'm not saying they made a mistake or anything. I'm just saying that I came in and it was already half baked and that was a mistake. So I come into this deal, I raised the money, I closed the deal, and I'm using basically their business plan that the previous guy was going to do, not my own. And then we get into it and then things just start going crazy. You know, we do our rehab, but then stuff keeps breaking. And the property just had bad bones. And we spent the next 3 years, our budget was $1 million. We spent about $1.3 million all in over 3 years. So that extra $300,000 came from cash flow. So our investors didn't get anything for 3 years. Then we then we sold it in year three for 200% return. On the sale, so we didn't get the refis. It wasn't as good as the first one, obviously, but
yeah,
still double their money. But they hated me until the day we closed and they got their check. They're like, okay, you're not so bad. but for 3 years, I ate crap from them because it was a rough deal, and yeah. So anyway, we got rid of that one, and I'm very fortunate to get rid of it. So at that time I JV'd on those next two deals. I JV'd with a different contractor and one of my current partners. And the theory was, okay, I've got construction, there's asset management, there's property management. That was the kind of, you know, the triangle. We had the three-legged stool of multifamily, and it, in theory, it worked, but where we failed that on that one was just, one, we didn't have a good partnership agreement. And so anybody who's JVing on deals, I say, make sure that you got a partnership agreement in place between the general partners as far as who's going to do what, et cetera. I was just giving out equity shares on the LP side like it was, you know, like it was just a piece of cake, you know, and there was no requirements, no agreement as far as what they're going to do for that. They just got piece of the action. So that was, again, learned.
So let me touch base here. You joint venture on the next two deals. So you had your partner on the first one.
Yeah.
I think you mentioned that the deal that you had a really hard time with that ended up turning out okay on the sale, doubling your money on the sale in 3 years. But for those 3 years, it was pretty rough. That was your third deal, correct?
Yep.
Okay. And so from 2011 to where we're at today, you've closed on quite a few deals. How many total?
Nine.
And you've taken how many of those full circle?
One.
Okay.
We've only sold one.
Gotcha. So that particular deal was the one that you sold.
Right. The cool. Others we've just refinanced. Everything's been great. Two of them we are redeveloping. So the second and the first deal are in with architects right now for redevelopment. So we won't be selling those. And so, yeah, it's interesting.
Okay. So let's talk, if you're okay, I'd like to dive into the deep value add. That's sort of the niche that you've carved out for yourself. And we've already touched on a few different points of deep value add where it can be a little bit crazy and get a little hairy at times, but there's also great opportunity. The numbers that you're throwing out about, you know, just these few deals that you've worked on are pretty impressive. So maybe talk to us about the methodology and the mindset that you need to have going into a deep value deal, deep value add.
You know, the mindset is you've got to have a bit of guts. You know, it's there, those deep value adds, and in some regard, they're less risky, actually, believe it or not. And they're less risky in some regard because you've got so much money. And by deep value add, just to be clear, just put some brackets on it, 25,000 a unit or more. I mean, I've heard people talk about, oh, they're doing a big value add and it's 10,000 a door. I'm like, get out of my face. Like, right. That is not a big value add. That is just a walk in the park. But big value add, moving floor, you know, creating new floor plans, moving walls around, adding washers and dryers, you know, big stuff. We're doing a 37,000 per door renovation right now. So it's just huge rehab. But in some regards, they're less risky because you've got so much money at play that when you discover things during the rehab, which you're going to discover things, you always discover things. That's part of what makes value add risky is, okay, what are you going to discover? When you have a deep value add, you've already got so much ammunition, so much weight behind you and the scope's already so big that typically it's easily absorbed. You know, like we've got wood rot. Okay, you spend a couple $100. We had a change order for like $1,500 and it covered the wood rot for like 10 units. And that was all it was. It was very minor. Now, and that was on a case by case basis. So whereas if we didn't have a big rehab, you'd have to then pay to change the wood and then put the sheetrock back together and any other cosmetic changes. So for us, a lot of the cosmetic stuff's already included and we'll fix all that. So we're really just paying for just the actual structural component of it. We put it together. We've come across a couple of times where the rafters and the ceiling have been rotten or broken, and we've had to go in and replace them, which is a pretty cool thing to see. I've actually got if you check my LinkedIn page, we got a video of us replacing some of the rafters. But anyway, it's pretty cool. Very cheap. I mean, it was like a couple $100 to do that repair, whereas before, if I wasn't doing everything else, thousands of dollars. So in that regard, it's easier. Now, where it's challenging is the execution side. So case in point, we're doing this big rehab. We were supposed to do a 10 unit per month takedown schedule. And that was based on the expirations. We saw which units were expiring, et cetera. And we figured that we can average it out to about 10. What happens, we close the next day, Hurricane Imelda comes through. We get a band of rain, knocks out 20 units all at once. We get an inch of water in them. So we're having to vacate 20 units. And then on top of that, you've got the other units that are still on their expiration schedule. So they're expiring. So it wasn't like we could stop those from expiring and just handle these 20. You've still got those 10 that are expiring and you're trying to renew them the best you can. But the property was in such a crap condition that the way the previous guy was just keeping the lights on was just leasing to anybody with a super low rate. And we weren't going to operate that way. So it was getting a bit rough. It took us when you do any takeover, it takes you a while to kind of get a grip on the reins and get things, you know, and figure out what's what. So right away, we were in a bad spot on that deal. And that's going to happen on any deal, right? Like Mike Tyson says, everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the mouth. So we got punched in the mouth pretty hard right out of the gate on that one. And it's not always that bad, but it's always something that happens that'll throw whatever beautiful plan that you had out the window. And then now you're in the fight. Now you're on the court and you're playing ball, and you know, whatever pregame plan you had, that's gone. So we're out trying to figure this out on the fly, and you know, and you make adjustments. And I think that's where where your ability will shine through, and where you're going to be successful is, do you make the right decisions in the heat of the moment that save you money? Because like that first deal we talked about, I made a lot of money. I spent, but I also lost a lot of money because I vacated the whole property for 9 months. It was empty, cost us $80,000 in carried interest. That wasn't baked in anywhere in the numbers. That was a check we were writing every month. So we don't do that anymore. So it's a lot cheaper just to try and manage cash flow. But sometimes you get punched in the mouth and you lose 20 units out of the gate. So I think that's where what makes it challenging is you don't know what's going to happen when the day after that, or for us, yeah, it's literally the day of, or the end of that day for the closing. Once you walk away from that closing table, you know, gloves are off and you're going to war.
Gotcha. So if I understand correctly, then for the last, you know, roughly 9 years or so, you focused on deep value add. That's been sort of right. Your bread and butter focus, and mainly in the Texas market. Have you gone outside of Texas?
No, we're even more central than that. We stay just in Houston. So we got Houston. Really? We were between here, Houston, and Corpus. So we've got properties. We got a nice base in Corpus, and a couple of properties all in between.
Okay, and have you been tempted to adjust your business model now with everything that's going on, or are you continuing to stay in this lane of deep value add in those markets?
No, I mean, we bought a 2015 constructed property last year, and that was a yield play. We spent a god awful $2,000 a unit. It was the most embarrassing. I didn't even know how to manage it because it was so little money. I was just I keep track of it in my head. It was so small. And so that was the frustrating thing. I was like, this is a really small rehab. I don't even know what to do here. So it was.
So you have gone outside of the deep value add more recently. Yeah. Okay.
And we do it. The deals we're looking at now, we're doing much lighter rehabs because value add means a lot of things. It's not just the physical side of it. There's the operational side of it. There's all the little add-ons you can do. There's, you know, all the different revenue streams that you're able to generate. That's all value add. And so we've got, you know, a nice kind of treasure chest of techniques and strategies to apply to our properties. That just the only difference between ours and other people's is that ours also includes a pretty broad physical renovation side as far as what we're able to do, the experience of having done it, and then what it costs us. And I think that's where, you know, just like in any industry, but I feel like real estate more so. So there's just a lot of sharks out there. And you go and you ask any GC, I mean, if you just post on LinkedIn or wherever that you need a bid, you're going to get 1,000 GCs coming out of nowhere trying to give you an offer or a bid to do some work. And you don't know if it's going to be good or not. And even a lot of times the some of the most mainstream GCs out there are just so expensive that, you know, you're almost paying for their brand. And that's kind of where we set ourselves apart. I mean, we found a good guy who did great work, and then we took the next step and we just brought him in house. So we, you know, earlier this year we took construction and brought it in house because we identified a group that was, you know, doing great results. They had 10 years in property management before they went construction. So they get it. They know what multifamily operations is like. And so anyway, yeah, that's another kind of unique thing about us is we not only have property management in-house, but we now have construction in-house.
So this is interesting, and maybe we can go into this. We were going to go into the deal dig, but if you're okay with that, I'd like to talk about the team building side of the business. You clearly have built up an incredible team to accomplish what you guys have accomplished, and you've integrated into both, you know, property management and now, as you mentioned, construction.
Yeah.
Maybe we can go into that a little bit.
Sure.
You mentioned the importance of joint venturing and partnerships and having partnership agreements. What guidance could you give someone who maybe they're in the space, but they don't have their team fully developed at this point? What kind of advice or direction would you give them to build that out? How have you done it?
Advice for somebody who's in multifamily, but doesn't have anything built out yet.
You doesn't know, have just a team starting. Built out yet.
You got to know what you're good at. That's first and foremost. So you got to figure out, okay, are you the money guy? Are you the operations guy? Do you want to do construction? Do you want to do analysis? I don't know. There's the fun thing about multifamily is you get to wear a lot of different hats. Do you want to be a podcast host? You know, I don't know. You can wear a lot of different hats. And so for me, I knew right away, like, I'm a numbers guy. I'm an engineer, worked for Exxon. I was a spreadsheet jockey for 5 years for them. Like, that's, you know, I got it. So that's what I brought to the table. And so I really focused on being the best I could at underwriting. I had no ambition to do operations. I might have talked to 5 residents in the last 9 years. And it's not because I'm avoiding them or anything. I don't deal with that side of the I don't deal with that side of the business. I have no clue how our property management software works. I don't even have access to it. So it's, you know, you pick your lanes. And I think where some people go wrong is they try and do everything. And it's an industry that looks simple on the surface, right? You're like, oh, you just do this, this, and this. And we make it sound so easy, but it's extremely complicated. Like, we could spend just probably a week on any given topic you want to talk about relating to multifamily. If you want to talk about operations, like, that's months of coursework. Not alone, then forget about all the regulations and fair housing and crap you got to take in the coursework. And then you want to look at underwriting. Underwriting is very complicated as well. So it's very nuanced. And so I would encourage somebody to first figure out what you're good at, figure out what you like. Actually, first, have patience and just listen to some podcasts, get involved and do everything. Do operations, do underwriting, do whatever. And then you'll know, oh, I definitely like this or I definitely don't like that. So do everything. Then once you've kind of narrowed it down to one or two items, then start to specialize. And then once you've specialized or as you're specializing, then you can start identifying other people who said, you know, like, hey, I really sucked at operations. So I brought in an operations partner. She's got 30 years of doing operations. So there's no need for me to, there's nothing I can ever teach her. She's always teaching me. It's just the opposite. She's always teaching me and basically mentoring me on how the industry works. And that's the other benefit you get is when you've got a very experienced partner is there, you've kind of got a mentor in-house. So it's a two-edged sword though. I mean, the other edge is that they've been doing it for a very long time. The industry is evolving rapidly, if you haven't noticed. And so there's going to be a tendency for them to keep doing it how they used to do it. I mean, I jokingly say that, you know, my partner has been, she has been operating property since before computers. So, like, just imagine, how would you even do that? I have no idea. So anyway, diversify, figure out, do everything, and then specialize, and then pick the people which you're gonna come encounter with them through the different meetups or wherever you're going through. And then what I've always done is just try to partner with people who are more experienced and more and further along in their career in those positions than you are. That way you'll be covered, because it doesn't really help you if you're the most experienced person in the company. I guess you want to be the least experienced person in that. If you're trying to lead the company, you want to have everybody around you being as strong as possible and stronger than you.
Yeah, love it. Cool. Well, Joseph, you've been gracious with your time. I've kept you a little bit longer than we had anticipated. But I appreciate you going into some of the detail on these different topics. I know we've bounced around a little bit here, but I think it's been an interesting conversation. I've really enjoyed it myself. But I do want to start winding down here to be respectful of your time. I've got 3 final questions for you. The first is, What's the biggest challenge you faced and had to overcome on your apartment investing journey that we could all learn from?
You know, the biggest challenge, I don't know, there's been so many. I hate the term biggest because then you're, but one that comes to mind is my first deal, right? That was a very challenging one because I was learning and everything was new to me. So it was extremely hard. I would say to anybody getting in the industry, it's going to be hard. Like you're not, that first deal is going to be, it should be probably the hardest one for anybody, regardless of whether you're doing a big value add or not, because everything's new to you. And so don't think that you're going to, you know, be the best things in sliced bread on your first deal like I did. it's supposed to be hard, and that's okay. So that was the most challenging one for me.
Great. What's the biggest win that you've had so far on your apartment investing journey?
Personally, the biggest win I've had was on that first one, because I owned half that deal. I've had percentage-wise bigger wins on other ones, but I didn't have as much ownership stake in the deal, so it wasn't as big for me. But that big, that, and also the first one was big because there was so much buildup to it, right? So just imagine 9 months of doing a renovation, zero cash, negative cash flow, pumping the property with cash to keep the lights on, and this is my first deal, so I'm flying on instruments here. Like, I'm only doing this and I'm digging myself further and further in the debt because the books and the mentors and the people told me it would work, but I've still to this day yet to see anybody do it at that point. I'd yet to see anybody do a big rehab, so I had no idea. Like, I'd ran the calculations, and I ran the calculations a couple of times a day for 9 months, just like, yeah, it's supposed to work. All right, let's keep going. Because, yeah, every day you're getting more and more in debt doing a rehab. Property's still empty, and then you got to lease it up, and you're just praying that people will pay what you underwrote to, and they did, plus some.
Yeah, and that was a big win. Cool. Yeah. Final question for you. What's the best advice you have for someone who's just starting their apartment investing journey?
Advice for somebody who's starting, you know, we kind of talked about that on just the partnering, and so, yeah, just to re-hit on that, diversify in the beginning, figure out, you know, do everything. Don't be spammy. I'd say that. I get a lot of people who are always emailing me, and or they send me these long LinkedIn messages. And I'm not talking about the ones who wanted to do like branding logos and new websites and SEO crap. I'm talking about like just people who are in the industry and they're wanting to start. And you got to be respectful of people's time. And I'm the same way. Like I have people who are much bigger than me. Like there's a guy in town who's got like 20,000 units. And so I'm very careful when I message him that, you know, like he's doing me a favor just by even responding to my message. And so I got to understand like the position, you know, you got to kind of understand where you're at, right, in the rank of in the big, you know, big picture of things, and just be like, just the fact that he's even responding to me is great. And I got a mentor early on as well, who since broke off and got his own company. And he's for a little while there, I was hoping that when he broke off on his own, I was like, hey, there's a chance I could outpace him and be bigger than him. And no, he's a beast. So that never happened. But that said, though, I meet with this guy quarterly. I'm actually due to meet with him again soon. But so anyway, so just, you know, you're going to have guys who are bigger than you. And I think a normal cadence for people that are freely giving you their time is, you know, quarterly, bi-monthly, every other month, a meetup is normal. Some people are thinking you're going to become their best friend or something, respond to them, you know, on a daily basis.
Yeah. Got to be tactful about the way that you approach people when you're asking for their guidance and direction. Yeah, that's important. I appreciate you mentioning that.
And you know, I want to kind of recap on that first question real quickly.
Yeah, please.
Biggest challenges. I also want to comment on biggest mistake, because I think that was part of it. And that was also the first one, because while I was technically correct, I did make more money by pushing through doing the big rehab, 200% return. I also lost 2.5 years of time. So just imagine what I could have bought 3 more deals, maybe. The problem is I had a negative track record, right? So at that time I was not, you know, who's going to invest with me? I just lost money on my first deal, my own money.
Sure.
So I didn't have the best track record. But that said, what you can learn from that is don't go into your first deal trying to hit a home run. Just get a deal, get on base, and be happier on base. Like, there's so much you got to learn that first deal. to try and knock it out of the park. And I mean, I wasn't intentionally trying to knock it out of the park. It just happened. And if it happens for you, great. But go into your first deal, just try and get on base, be happy. And the best way to get on base and get good returns is to drop your fees. That's the other thing I see with people. They go in on these deals and they try and do 30% promotes, 8% pref. I'm like, yeah, those are for guys like myself and others who've been doing this for 10 years and who know how to structure and know how to underwrite and know how to perform. This is your first at bat, man. Like there's a lot you don't know. So for you to go and charge that same fee, like you really need a lower fee, much lower fee to buffer you so that you can still exit and look like a champion.
Yeah, that's great.
Part of the reason I had no fee on my first deal. So the other part why the return was so high, there was zero promote. I did all that work, zero promote.
Yeah, that's great advice. Man, I appreciate that. Well, before we go, I want to touch base on your multifamily passive investor training course. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I've created this course that it's a little different. It's a lot different than everything we've been told. So everybody can take these boot camps, right? And they can teach you how to do what I do, what you do, what other syndicators do. The problem is if you're a passive investor, you don't have any of that information. You don't have rent rolls or T12s or complex underwriting models. You've got a 30 or 40 page PDF, an LP agreement, a PPM, and maybe something else, and an address. That's it. So you got to try and do the same analysis or similar analysis to determine, is this deal good or not? And also, maybe this is your first investment. Who knows? So what I've done, and this all came about because I had several of my investors who were investing with other people, and that's fine. Investors are like a community, right? They're investing with everybody, and it's just how it works. And there's no kind of, these are my investors and you can't.
Right.
It's like, no. So, but what was frustrating for me was my guys were getting hosed on these other deals. I'm like, whoa, that deal is like all messed up. They'd send me this stuff to get my opinion on it. And I would just break the whole thing apart. And I'm like, wow, this is a really crap deal. You should not invest in this. And I just started to see, because it just started happening. I wasn't doing it on purpose, but people started bringing me deals. And I started seeing just a proliferation of really crappy deals and really heavy fee deals. So I created this course that teaches passives how they can take that investment package and break it apart like I would and determine if the deal is good or bad without having anything with just that. So I had to custom create my own metrics, own calculations, and just completely reverse engineer everything in order to create this course. So it's not like anything you're going to find in any books anywhere. It's all custom calculations. It's actually a three-part course. So it's the 101, 102, 101, 201, and 301. So 101 is basic stuff that actually is kind of what's out there. And so if you don't know anything about multifamily, you would take the 101. The 201 is where I teach you how to rip apart the investment package and determine if it's a good deal or not. And the 301 is where we get really nitty-gritty with it. And we talk about partnership agreements, GP compensation, 506C regs, like show you how you can go and check that with Aetna. Sorry, not Aetna, that's the insurance company, Edgar, and a couple other stuff. So there's a lot of coursework in there, but just the 201 class has 22 videos.
Oh, wow.
So it's a lot of content. I've been very busy over COVID. And so that rolls out and we're really excited for it to roll out, and it's really going to help a lot of passes out there and help them make better investment decisions.
That's great, man. Yeah. So if you're listening and you're a passive investor, how can people connect with you to learn more about that program or just connect with you in general, learn more about your investments?
The best way would be on LinkedIn, reach out to me, or if they're interested in the course, send email to info@triarcrep.com. I'll put them on the mailing list and the invite. But yeah, I'm pretty active on LinkedIn. I'm posting almost daily there. And our website, you know, we're rolling out a brand new website. Has nothing to do, our website's, we're not really marketing. This is the course as much right now.
Sure.
It's going to be a lot of word of mouth. But the website is void of the class, but it's brand new and we're really proud of it. So if you want to learn about us, our construction company, our property manager company, go check that out. We just spent a lot of money and a lot of hours.
What is the web address again on that one?
Triarcrep.com.
Okay, great. And I'll make sure that we got that in the show notes so that everybody can connect there.
Yeah, man.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Well, Joseph, I really appreciate your time. I appreciate you going into some detail about your journey and your process, diving into a little bit about that first deal that you, you know, 2.5 years grinding through that thing to make it a big win on the back end, but a lot of work and a lot of sweat and tears. And then the track record that you've developed over the last, you know, roughly decade. Congratulations to you and your team. And thank you for being willing to come on and share your journey with our listeners and help us out. So I appreciate it. And I look forward to connecting with you again soon.
Thank you, David.
All right. Bye-bye.
Hey, before you go, if you and I haven't connected yet, please head on over to KonovoCapital.com. You can join our investor network or download our free passive investor's guide to multifamily syndications. Either way, I'd love to connect with you personally. Also, I just want to thank you for listening to the show and providing feedback and reviews. If you haven't already, please, please, please take a second and leave us a rating and written review. This helps us to be found by new listeners and helps us attract great guests in the future. Thanks again for listening to the show, and I hope you have a great day.